Mode One.
This is Megan.
And this is Sakara. And we're metaphysical erotica writers. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on The Erotic Conversationalist.
In the last 10 years, there is at least one genre of fiction books that has exploded in popularity. For most of the 20th century, many single and married women would lie in their beds and cozy up to a more conservative and conventional romance novel that would inevitably leave them feeling very warm and fuzzy inside. But in today's society, the appeal of the traditional romance novel has been surpassed by more edgy, risque, provocative, and explicit content, with one example of this growing trend being the unexpected popularity of the mainstream erotic novel 50 Shades of Grey. Can reading an erotic novel get a single heterosexual man sexually aroused in the same manner that watching a hot, kinky porn video can? Can a man or a woman learn how to experience better episodes of sexual and orgasmic pleasure from reading an erotic novel? Is the term romantically erotic an oxymoron, or is it a concept whose power is highly underestimated? What exactly is metaphysical erotic? In today's interview and discussion, my two guests are both erotica writers, and these two intelligent and articulate authors are going to go into detail about what goes into creating a hot, highly sensual erotica novel, and how they combine elements of Greek mythology as well as the principles of metaphysics and sacred geometry to empower the rise of the divine masculine and feminine through the vehicle of sacred sex. Their mission is to combine their talent and help contribute to the evolving definition of the modern erotic woman and the modern erotic male. Who are these two talented erotica writers who want to share their talents, knowledge, and erotic wisdom with men and women all over the world that will ultimately result in a more powerful sexual experience for all involved? Their names are Megan Hussey and Sakara. And right now, these two ladies are about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the King of Verbal Seduction. This is The Erotic Conversationalist.
You know, when you look at mythology, there are so many romantic legends. You know, it's time to reintroduce these to a new audience and also to introduce a little class into erotica, a little history, so that you're thinking about what you read. It's not just like a cock tease or a clit tease. It's a brain tease as well.
My person is so wet right now.
Oh, say it again.
My pussy is so wet right now.
Oh, girl, I want to fuck you.
That's what I'm talking about. Fuck me good, Alan.
Oh, say it again.
Alan, I want you to fuck me hard.
And have Megan come lick my balls.
I want you to fuck Megan's now. And give it to me good.
Welcome, listeners, to episode number 10 of The Erotic Conversationalist. I am back for another episode. And listeners, I want to take a few seconds just to thank you for making The Erotic Conversationalist so popular. As you know, this kind of started off as a spinoff show from my normal show, Upfront and Straightforward. And the feedback I've gotten over the last 3 to 4 years on the various episodes have just been outstanding. Again, this is only my 10th episode since August of 2009. But if you talk about feedback per episode, it has just been overwhelming and flattering. And so I want to tell you listeners, you know, I love you all for taking the time to listen to the episodes that tickled your fancy. And please keep providing me with feedback. And speaking of feedback, I know I'm going to get a lot of great feedback after you listen to this episode, because I have two women that are both incredibly intelligent and articulate and creative, and their names are Megan Hussey and Sakara. Ladies, how are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm very relaxed, and I'm very excited to talk to you both and learn more about you too. So let me just start off by asking first, Megan, I'll ask you, when did you first know that you had both a talent for writing as well as a passion for writing?
Well, I'd say that I started writing as soon as I could pick up a pen. That was always one of my main interests as a child, was making up stories, you know, and writing. And I always, you know, I'd work for school newspapers, and I would enter creative writing contests. And I think I wrote my first book at about 10 or 11, never published, thankfully.
you wrote a book at 10 or 11?
Yes.
Wow.
I was a big mystery fan at the time, and I actually wrote a long-form mystery. And it wasn't the greatest, but I did write it. And I studied writing in college. And it was really during college that I started to read romance and erotica. And that's when I really decided that that was my genre of choice. You know, that's what I enjoyed reading the most. And I felt like I had a lot to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Sakara, same question. When did you first realize you had both the talent and the passion for writing?
Well, definitely being a Gemini is quite a fun journey in this life, because I feel that creativity in writing has always been the foundation that's run through my life. And when I discovered writing, I was pretty young too, like Megan. Given the option between a typewriter or a radio, I actually chose the typewriter. And I didn't write creatively until maybe around my college years. My roommate and I, we would get super trashed, and then we would bust out the word processor. This is aging me, I can tell, because, you know, people don't even know what word processor means. And we'd bust that out, we'd be totally wasted, and we'd be writing, and all of a sudden I'd get this, like, fun, wicked streak, and we would turn this normally very sweet, sane story into, like, the nastiest erotica. And I was just like, I just cracked me up so much. I just had a really weird sense of humor, I suppose. And, you know, throughout the years, writing kind of wove and interwoven my life, and recently has come back in the form of written words. It's been music for many years and just receiving songs that way. So I feel super blessed and grateful to be able to receive inspiration and transmute that into so many different forms, multimedia forms. It's really quite fun.
Now, speaking of, you said, I feel super blessed. I want you to share with my listeners, you have this very catchy, unique signature in your emails where you say, bless up. How did that come about?
Well, I do play in a reggae band. It's a reggae band of women, and we all have this particular path that we follow. And, you know, when I take a look at my life and I look at my relations and my connections, I feel really blessed. And this is a saying that I guess has run through the communities for years, bless up or bless. And when I say that, it's like I'm sending out that blessing to others as I receive them as well. It's just a really sweet phrase. You know, for a long time it was much love or give thanks. And, you know, I've been writing Bless Up for quite so many years, and it feels righteous.
Both of you two already kind of had a career in writing. When did you two first connect? How did you two first connect?
Yes, well, I can tell you that I have been a published erotica author and have also written, material for the adult, sex-positive adult industry, adult films and such, since about 2005. And I had noticed that lately I have been getting offers for projects that I considered just very, well, idiotic, I guess is a word. I mean, just very, sex with aliens, rape scenarios. I mean, just some really terrible stuff that I didn't even consider to be remotely erotic, And so I found a call for submissions and basically a job listing that Sakara had posted. And I just, as I read it, a wave of warmth came over me, and a very comforting wave that was at the same time energizing. And I knew at that point that I had found a perfect, partner for the type of erotica that I wanted to write. Yes, it's hot. It's very hot. But it's also gentle, and positive, and it's empowering to both women and men, And so I answered her ad, and on Sakara, I'll let you take it from there. What happened then?
So, when I had received close to over 100 submissions, you know what that makes you feel like? That heady sense of power when you have 100 submissions? And so I had to go through all of these, and actually it was an energetic hit. It was a I picked the right person based on how a pendulum responded, and I trusted the answer. Ever since then, I had already written the route, and so in this interim time, there was still all this information coming through, especially with mythology, and that's where Mithrotica was born. And, we had started working together, and it's been a real delightful process. I feel really blessed up to connect with a really conscious and forward-thinking woman and a writer and friend.
Yeah, she's become one of my closest and dearest friends. She really has. And we've had so much fun on the journey. And, it's just like a long-lost, sister from another mother, whatever, long-lost sister.
Okay. So, Megan, you mentioned that in college, that's when you read your first erotica novel?
Yes.
Do you happen to remember what were some of the storylines that really caught your interest and made you say, oh, I like this?
Yes, well, I'm not sure if I remember my very first one, but I do remember one of the first ones that really spoke to me, so to speak, was The Lover by Robin Scone. And The Lover is historical. It's set in Victorian times. And it is about a woman who is, all of her life she's been a caregiver for her parents. She's never married or, even had a lover. And so when her parents pass away, she's left with a fortune. And so she decides basically to hire, he's basically a male prostitute. He's basically what they would call an escort or a gigolo. And they have a very exciting, exhilarating affair. And he really, not only does he take her virginity, but, he just opens her up, totally and acts out her fantasies. And they end up falling in love. And, it is just, I just thought that it was very different than anything I'd read. It was certainly different than those dime store, romances where it's always a doctor and a nurse, or a single mom and the construction worker who lives next door or whatever, And I just thought that it was so exciting, And I thought, I have fantasies like that, so maybe it wouldn't be too outrageous for me to put them on paper.
Okay, Sakara, when was the first time you read an erotica novel that really tickled your fancy?
I was really young. I gravitated to this book, and it's funny because I just reconnected to this book recently. I was probably about 9 or 10, I've always had a very sensual, curious nature, even as a child. And I went to the library, and I decided to completely bypass the children's section, and I just let myself be led. And I found this book called Sky O'Malley by Beatrice Small. And it had such a powerful heroine, and I didn't quite understand the scenes. I was fascinated by the love story, even more fascinated by the sexual interactions and how my body responded to that. And I'm grateful that was my actual first introduction to this world of romance and erotica, because it showed me how beautiful and powerful love could be and held in the vessel of a strong woman, too.
Okay, now why do you both think that? I read a USA Today article back in, I want to say it was 2006, where they talked about how erotica novels had surpassed the traditional, conventional romance novel, and women were just buying erotic novels off the shelves like hotcakes. Megan, first I'll ask you, what do you think has contributed to the increasing popularity of the genre of erotica novels?
Yes, well, personally, I think that women are just becoming more free, and as they become more independent in all areas of their life, you know, financially and professionally, but they also are seizing up their sexuality, too. And if you look at just the revolution that has been happening in the past, 10 to 20 years, where, you know, we have Playgirl magazine and the Chippendales and the Magic Mike movie, and, you know, it's just seems like we have women's porn movies, you know, and I think that women are just really, previously they were afraid to express their sexuality, and so they would call it romance, you know, they would put the label of romance on it, and it somehow made it seem more innocent and acceptable. And now I think they're just kind of saying, you know, hey, you know, we can own this. It's okay to be sexual. And so I think that's why erotica is becoming more popular.
Mm-hmm. Sakara, what's your thoughts on the, do you think it's that men and women in society, and particularly women, are slowly but surely becoming less prudish and more free-spirited and uninhibited?
I could definitely say yes to that. There's definitely a shift in the vibration of how women have stepped into their power, turned the tables and changed the roles in normal society. And in a way, it's disempowered a lot of men, and they're not quite sure how to be around women now, because women are coming from a place of knowing what they want and not being ashamed or afraid to admit their needs, their desires. And, you know, when we talk in terms of the feminine, the divine feminine right now, this awakening that our world is experiencing is still in an infancy stage. We're very much still in the second chakra. It's about like sexual expression and choices and the ability to manifest and financial stability and freedom. So that's where a lot of women are coming from right now, which explains why your show is so powerful. It's a reflection, you know, of what women want.
So, Megan, let me ask you, Sakara was talking about when she was as young as 9 or 10, how she already had a sense of sensuality, eroticism. So, Megan, when was the first time you remember being so aroused that you wanted to play with your pussy?
Well, I tell you, I was a bit of a late bloomer because, you know, like you, I was raised in Indiana, you know, and so I actually didn't have a lot of those experiences until like 18, you know, in college, you know, but I felt like I just really seized my desires and independence, you know, and I was just so overwhelmed, you know, with desire at times, because I've always been very sexual, and so, you know, I just couldn't stand it anymore, you know, and
I just had to play with your pussy, huh?
I had to have a release of some sort.
Say, Alan, I had to play with my pussy.
Alan, I had to play with my pussy.
Oh, say it again.
I had to play with my pussy.
So you waited till you were 18. start playing with that pussy, but you couldn't take it no more, and you said, I have to play with this pussy.
Yeah.
Did it feel
yeah,
good when you were playing with that pussy?
Yeah, because I didn't, you know, I pretty much had to figure things out myself because I was raised in a very conservative family, you know, but...
Now, let me ask you, did your mother and father frown on the idea of masturbation, self-pleasure?
Oh, certainly, yes. Certainly. They, you know, they were wonderful people, you know, and, well, my mom is still with us, you know, wonderful people. But, a sexuality in general was not discussed much, you know, at our house. So
the first time you played with your pussy and made yourself come, you became addicted to that orgasmic feeling, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. You know, it's like when you have that release, especially for the first time, there is no feeling like it. And it's just overwhelming. And it just really takes you away. It's pounding. Yeah, your heart pounds and your clit pounds. And yeah,
I like
you
the way
kind
you
of explore.
Say that again. Say my clit pounds.
My clit pounds. My clit pounds when I play with my pussy.
Say it again.
My clit pounds when I play with my pussy.
Say it again. Now, Sakara, when you start reading it at 9 or 10, did that make you want to just start playing with your pussy?
You know, what was fascinating is that I actually had a boyfriend before I even started playing with my pussy. Somehow filled a need that I didn't quite feel until that relationship ended, and, well, my naturally ravenous and curious nature just read whatever I could.
So, in other words, you're telling me you had a cock in your pussy before you ever played with your pussy.
You could say that, yes.
Okay. Now, when the first time you did play with your pussy, did it feel real good?
It did. I was more curious. What was that wet substance coating my fingers? It kind of freaked me out, so I didn't do it. But it was such an interesting experience that it always left me curious.
Okay, elaborate on that. So you said it kind of freaked you out. What do you mean it freaked you out?
I guess it freaked me out because I was so naive and innocent, and I didn't quite understand what was happening to my body. It wasn't something that we talked about in my household.
Mm-hmm. So similar to Megan, your parents kind of frowned on the idea of self-pleasure. Sakara, what are your thoughts on playing with your pussy and women in general playing with their pussies?
I think it's a healthy part of having a human body. I think that when we're able to recognize our sensuality, our naturally erotic, creative natures, then we don't hold back from how we can express ourselves in the world. It's as normal as taking a bath, as brushing your teeth.
So tell me again, say what's as natural as taking a bath or brushing your teeth?
As masturbation, touching your pussy, jerking your dick. Perhaps that's the reason why we have so many problems in the world. People hold back from feeling aroused, not only in their bodies, but in their minds and in their hearts.
Okay, Megan, I'm going to ask you a few questions and then I'll... Concentrate on Sakara. First, Megan, I noticed you're described on the internet as, and you kind of already alluded to it, a feminist erotica writer. What distinguishes a feminist erotica writer from, say, just a conventional erotica writer?
Yes, well, I don't call myself that because I think that, unfortunately, you know, the term feminist, which basically just means, you know, being supportive of equality and wanting to bring men and women closer together, has really gotten a bad name, you know, in the past few years. And so I really wanted to put a positive spin on it by saying that, yes, I'm a sex-positive feminist. And, yes, we like sex, too. And it's kind of like, I know on your show you've mentioned Nina Hartley, and she is an idol of mine. You know, she is the perfect example of the sex-positive feminist, you know, and to where she can say, yes, I enjoy sex, and yes, I can please my man, but I also want my man to please me. You know, and so to me, that's what it's all about, is having strong heroines who know what they want and who aren't afraid to go get it.
It's funny you mentioned Nina. I had a very, I loved conversing with her because I had been a fan of hers for a long time.
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah.
And similar to something Sakara said earlier, and I use that term myself about own it. Like I always tell my readers, listeners, and clients, you have to own your sexuality. And that was one of her big messages when I interviewed her. Is because here's what I'm going to give one of my pet peeves. I don't like people, men or women, who say they know deep down that they're this very free-spirited, open-minded, uninhibited type sexual person. But because they're scared of what other people are going to think, they try to give off this public facade of being this very conservative prude type. And that's what Nina said. She said, I don't really, basically, she was like, I don't give a fuck what other people think. You know, like she talked about how people always want to say that the only women who get into the adult film industry are those who have been sexually abused or those who are on drugs or some other way something's wrong with them. She was like, how come it can't be because you just enjoy it? You enjoy the work you do. You know, you have a passion for it. She said, I was a nurse. I was never sexually abused, didn't do drugs. Anyway, I just really loved conversing with her. Now, also, Megan, I read where you used to work for Playgirl. Tell my listeners in what capacity did you work for Playgirl, and how did you enjoy
many.
That?
I loved it. Yes, many. Well, it was funny because I had always wondered, you know, like, because it was when I was growing up that they first started having, like, adult channels, adult cable channels, and they were almost all, like 99% aimed at men, you know, and then you might have 1% aimed at couples, you know, if you were lucky. And I know that the Playboy Channel does show some good, you know, couples films and Spice and all that. But it seems like with women, you know, we really, really had to look hard, you know, you know, for a movie that was good for us. And so I had read Playgirl ever since college. And as a matter of fact, you know, when I started pleasuring myself, I usually had a Playgirl nearby.
Ooh, so you love looking at men's cocks, huh?
Yes, I do. I love looking at men's cocks. Yes, I love looking at men's cocks. And you know, was always a devoted Playgirl reader, and I found out a few years ago that they were going to have a Playgirl TV cable channel to where they would have male centerfolds and where they would have triple X explicit movies, you know. And I was very excited, and I wrote into their website, and I was so passionate, I guess you could say, that they hired me. and I did so many things. I headed up their Playgirl Posse fan club, which was a bunch of women just like me, if you can imagine that. And I wrote a back cover copy for Bedtime Stories, which is a Playgirl DVD. If you ever look up as a description on the DVD, I wrote that. And I wrote erotic stories for the Playgirl website. And
So Megan, what do you find so appealing about fantasy themes and paranormal themes?
Well, you know, to me, when I am reading, you know, something like an erotic piece, I mean, it's okay if it's all sex, but I like for there to be something else. I like there to be something magical, you know, and mystical that brings these people together. And I just love, it's just very arousing if there's a theme like a vampire or a merman or something out of the ordinary. The idea of a man like that coming into your life and seducing you is just thrilling.
Now, you mentioned... Uh-huh. When you were just talking, you mentioned merman. Now, I'm sure a lot of my listeners will be like, what the fuck is a merman? Explain to my listeners what a merman is.
That's what I thought, too, when she asked me to write something. Yes. Well, a merman is basically a siren, and he is the male version of the mermaid. And the reason that I like that idea is that, first of all, when he's on land, he takes on the body of a man, of a normal man, you know, just something gorgeous like I just looked at. And, you know, he, and also what I like about the concept of the siren is that he's seductive, you know, and he knows what a woman wants, and he has special ways of pleasuring her, just like a female siren would for a man.
Now, I see on Amazon.com that you have not only written a lot of these fantasy erotica novels, but you have co-written, like, I want to say, two or three self-help type books. Briefly tell my listeners about that.
Yes, I actually wrote a book about how to be a male stripper. And, yeah.
And what prompted you to write that book?
Because I have been going to male strip shows since I was in college, and I always found that it was a beautiful way to help me express my sexuality, and it helped really to free up my inhibitions. And I've also dated several dancers, and so, yeah, I was working with a publisher that wanted to do erotic self-help, and so I offered, I came up with the idea of writing one about how to be a male exotic dancer, you know, because I really wanted to show men how they could take their clothes off and strip for a lady.
Now, you know what's funny, and my listeners on my other show, Unfriendly Straightforward, have heard me talk about this a couple times. In my last book, it's called The Possibility of Sex, I briefly mentioned how women, you guys go crazy over male strippers. Like, there's this strip club in Indianapolis that had, it had two sides with this, like, big opening between it. And
I've been there.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And it's so funny because I had told guys, I was going, it was a bachelor party, and I had told some of the guys, I said, watch, my prediction, the women on their side are going to be going nuts. And they would have tried to argue with me. They were like, no, you know, man, how horny we are, man. Blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, we couldn't even concentrate on the women that were in front of us. Because we were all looking in that opening through the female side. And the first time I personally experienced, I've never actually, you know, had a career or anything as a male stripper. But my first foray into that was when I was in college. This female friend of mine was doing this fashion show for this local lingerie shop. And she mainly had female models and was modeling female lingerie. But she got me and two other guys to model, like, G-strings for men. And, oh, my God, I have to tell you, ladies, I never felt so objectified in my life. These women were just without permission, they were just grabbing my ass and just grabbing on my dick. And I was like, wow, these women. It's funny because when women are in the company of only other women, it's like their whole personality changes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they were very assertive and very just, mm-hmm. Yeah, me and the other two guys, we were like, wow, this is the shit. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience. Now, both of you two, why such emphasis on Greek mythology? What do you think we can learn about relationships and about sexuality from Greek mythology?
You know, I believe that, you know, when you look at mythology, there are so many romantic legends, you know, like Aphrodite, the goddess of love, and just an Adonis, you know, that they seem right for the picking. You know, I mean, it just seems natural that we would want to retell the legends of sacred love, you know, and passion. And, you know, it's time to reintroduce these to a new audience and also to introduce a little class, you know, into erotica, a little history, so that you're thinking about what you read. You know, it's not just like a cock tease or a clit tease. It's a brain tease as well.
So, Sakara, explain to my listeners, what exactly is, even though you've been talking about the concepts of metaphysics, What is metaphysical erotica in a nutshell? And why does this concept appeal to you and Megan so much?
Well, metaphysical erotica in a nutshell, and that's a very big nut, by the way.
Oh, you're going to have to say that again.
Oh, Alan, you've got a very big nut to crack. I hope Megan warned you how I'm rather playful in nature. That always gets me in trouble.
Oh, I can tell how playful and sassy you are, Sakara.
Well, in a nutshell, however, metaphysical erotica is intended and created to turn you on a physical, emotional, mental, and energetic level. And it does more than just make your body feel. It expands your mind. It opens your DNA. That's something different than a lot of erotica out there. And it's hot.
Well, of course, that's the most important. I failed to ask. Erotic female.
I would say that she is a woman who knows what she wants and goes and gets it. She is a woman who is in touch with her fantasies and desires, and she is not afraid, you know, to express herself sexually. She's not afraid to seek pleasure, you know, because we all need that. As human beings, we have a need for sex and pleasure and intimacy. And the modern woman just takes what she wants. You know, she seizes that opportunity. And also, at the same time, she can still be, you know, a career woman, a mother if she chooses, or a wife. Or, you know, like me, she can be a lifelong playgirl. You know, it can be either way. She can set the course of her own life and her own sexual experiences.
Okay. And Sakara, I want you to define for my listeners the modern erotic male.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The modern erotic man is a man who is not only conscientious of his needs, but also the needs of his partner. And I say partners because that is a journey that a man does go through as he discovers himself and his ability to be an intimate partner. A modern erotic man knows how to connect on a heartful, mental, emotional, and physical level with a woman. And a modern erotic man knows how to talk to women, not just their own mind, but also how to converse with them and to actually listen. So men who are listening, you know, I'm grateful for brothers who can do that. And it's also important for a modern erotic man to work on his stuff. You know, that is such a paradigm that I see shifting in men, that they don't have to be these brutes that carry this stereotype of how men are supposed to behave. They deal with their issues as they come up. They go seek help. They take care of their bodies. They take care of their hearts. They're accountable for their word. They walk with integrity in their lives, and they're not ashamed to share how they feel. I'm part of this really interesting ecstatic dance community where I live, and there is such a vast array of what I would call modern erotic men. And yet, when a modern erotic man is a little too feminine, that doesn't turn me on. When a man is more feminine than I am, it doesn't quite do it for me.
See, you and I feel the same way, because, of course, I feel the same way about women. I remember I was doing a speaking presentation in Chicago for what's called a relationship chat. It was me and two female speakers, and this other female speaker, she got the crowd riled up because she said, well, she specifically targeted black women, who was like 90% of the crowd, and she said, I'm going to tell you, sisters, a lot of you sisters have too much yang and not enough yin. Mm-hmm. And boy, did half of them get riled up. But it was the truth. You know, she went on the tone. She said, you know, most of the most passionate relationships, you have to have, you know, that one partner who has that a lot of masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And a partner who has the feminine energy, even though she went on to say that, you know, we both have both in us. But the men, of course, to have predominantly the masculine energy. And she told the sisters that they just had too much masculine energy and not enough feminine energy. And that's probably why their relationships weren't working. And, you know, she did have a lot of women in the audience who agreed with her, but I'd say at least 50 to 60% of the women there, they tried to challenge that and contest that. But, yeah, because I think you already know, I love feminine energy. And okay, now, Sakara, you had mentioned that in addition to being a nurse, you're what's referred to as an energy practitioner. Can you explain to my listening audience what that means, what that entails?
Well, there are so many different forms of energy work and healing. A lot of people are familiar with Reiki, which is a Japanese form of energy work. And what I do is I work in this really special place called Akashic Records, which is kind of like this metaphysical library that holds everyone's book of lives. So when I received the information to write these books, they came in through the records. And so it's like taking very ancient knowledge and connecting it to the present time. So when I work with people, they often go into the records to ask questions. And they usually take the form of questions related to love, business, health, career. And the other types of energy work that I do, it deals a lot with metaphysics, sacred geometry, and working with the body, the organs, and the energy field. So to me, bridging these two into the world of erotica is really evolving mankind's consciousness to be able to receive these kinds of vibrations.
Yeah, because, you know, since I've been in high school, I've heard people, you know, like brothers and sisters, they will, in a slang way, talk about, yeah, you know, I'm vibing with this man or I'm vibing with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to that. That's not just kind of a slang phrase. You really do connect with someone's energy and their vibration. Now, here's what I find interesting. Now, I was a pretty good math student in both high school and college, and I did pretty well in, you know, calculus, trigonometry. Now, I saw something where you emphasize sacred geometry, and that really caught my eye. What is sacred geometry?
Well, all you have to do, Alan, is open your eyes, look at yourself in the mirror, look at everything in the world, and realize that all of these molecules put together are in sacred spheres. There's different forms in there. And that is the fabric of the universe that you're seeing. So one of the most sacred shapes that I've ever been exposed to is known as the flower of life. It's a series of circles. And this shape has been imprinted in some of the most sacred temples all over the world. And I honestly feel like that shape is also imprinted in us. So what's really powerful about sacred geometry is knowing the right shape, the right color, can actually allow you to imprint the program, a thought, a feeling, and send that out into the world and elicit a reaction. And so when I work with sacred geometry, especially in these books, which I'll be sending you one, especially The Root, that's all about the first chakra. And the second book I'm working on right now is about the second chakra. So when I talk about these shapes coming into the body, it's entering your mind, and it's allowing these transformations to occur on a microcellular level. If anything, you know, it's seeing a mathematical representation of the Creator.
Now, since you mentioned the first chakra, explain to my listeners, what is a chakra dysfunction?
So as human beings, you know, if you were to step outside and take a look at us, you wouldn't see little forms of humans. You'd probably see little glowing lights, balls of lights, if you'd say that. Human beings are that. We have this energy field that radiates, this vibration, you know. And these chakras are these energetic spheres in our bodies. They spin and they put out this life force. When somebody passes, all their chakras stop spinning. And this is something that's very ancient knowledge, you know, as far back as the ancient scripts in the Bhagavad Gita with the Hindus and the Egyptians. So when your chakras are spinning, you are living in a capacity that could either be your highest potential or to your lowest. So dysfunctions, for instance, in your root chakra might show somebody who's fearful of sex, insecure, highly insecure, very disconnected from their feelings, and often judgmental only because of a shield that they carry to hide any fear or abandonment they may have experienced in the world. This is so very apparent in our world today. There's so many dysfunctions because we're carrying that information in our bodies and interacting with everyone and passing that information on. So chakra dysfunctions are as commonplace as psychological and emotional disturbances in this world, part of the good times of being human.
Now, what inspired you to write The Root, Discovering Power, and also briefly tell my listeners what's the general subject matter of The Root, Discovering Power?
Well, when I spoke earlier about the evolution of erotica, this is something that I was not expecting to show up in my life. I had no idea that 2013 would even evolve like that. All I knew was that I was in a relationship. I didn't dig it. I wasn't turned on. I wasn't sexually satisfied. And while the man was absolutely amazing and did everything for me, I had this knowledge that there was something more that I was feeling. And one day I was at work, I work as a nurse, and I heard this conversation in my head. And this conversation was unlike any other conversation I had. It was like I was sticking my head inside of this door and looking into this very intricate world. And through a series of weeks, this conversation grew, and the insights I received into this world were even more powerful. And so that's where The Root came. And this is really a story of how two organizations, the light and the dark, are fighting for control of people who have psychic abilities to bring them into their side so that they can stay in control of power and their position. And what happens in these books is that when they have sex, it's usually very initiatory in nature. So the first book, The Root, came as an inspiration for the root chakra. Let me tell you something. When you write a book about the root chakra dysfunctions, when you write a book about a character experiencing fear, feelings of abandonment, feelings of self-worth, and then you're writing these initiatory erotic stories that, you know, you open up this universal bank of knowledge to receive this information, you write these erotic stories of these symbols and these shapes coming in, and it's attuning your body, and it's turning you on and changing you in a way so that these dysfunctions come up. Your life goes on a real crazy journey. And that's exactly what I experienced after writing The Root. It really uncovered a lot of aspects of my nature, especially my sensual nature. And yeah, now I'm working on the second book, and the second book is really all about discovering power and how to cultivate that power.
That's one. It's entitled Sacred Fire, Cultivating Power.
So this is how we blend metaphysics and erotica, is because when a person reads these books, these things happen in their body. You know, these shapes come in. You're turned on just more than a physical level. You're turned on an emotional, an energetic, a spiritual level. You're not sure why you're buzzing, why your body tingles, why your pussy is just so hungry for more. Because
you got to say that again. What's hungry for more?
Your pussy is so hungry for more.
Well, say that again.
Yeah, your pussy is hungry for more.
Now, what is transformative meditation, and how does it relate to one's sex? Is there a connection between meditation and good sex?
Is there a relationship between meditation and, did you say good sex?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I think they're one
of the... You, like, understatement.
Holy moly. You know, in all honesty, that is one of the reasons why I have ended relationships in the past, because I didn't get in that proper meditation, and that our bodies didn't connect, that spark wasn't there. And for the sake of just fucking, I'm sorry.
Gotta feel it.
You don't feel it, and you're not turned on, not just physically, but all the way. If your mind isn't melting, it doesn't work, man. And that's the thing about meditation, is it doesn't just stay in a time frame when you allot that to yourself. Your meditation is your living, breathing being. When you bring that into your relations, it's sacred. That's why sex can be so sacred.
Well, I got to ask you, I was talking about the rising popularity of erotica novels worldwide. And, of course, all three of us know that one of the most popular erotic novels in the last couple of years was 50 Shades of Grey. And I was listening to a podcast interview that you two did with another host, and I noticed you two were split. One of you said you gave it a thumbs up, and one gave it a thumbs down. So, Megan, let me ask you, number one, what did you think of 50 Shades of Grey? And if you liked it, why did you like it? Or if you disliked it, why did you dislike it?
Well, you know, I think that one positive thing that 50 Shades of Grey has done is that it has encouraged women, you know, to talk more about their sexuality and what turns them on and everything. Now, to me, as you probably gathered from listening to the podcast, I did not like it overall. But the reason was, it definitely wasn't because of the language or the sexuality. I was all into that, you know, but I didn't like, you know, there are parts when he yells at her, you know, when he makes her feel bad, where he tells her, you know, where to go and what to dress and what kind of car to drive, you know. And so to me, I didn't really see that it was anything revolutionary, because when you think about it, that's the kind of stuff that we've seen in those bodice ripper romances for a long time. And see, personally, it's all a matter of personal choice. But for me, I like some of the newer stuff that came out in the 90s and early 2000s, where the women had more control, you know, like maybe she could tie him up once in a while, you know, or, you know, maybe she could give him a spanking, you know, or something like that, you know? And so I guess that's kind of my position on it.
Okay. Sakara, what did you like about 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, you know what? I really like 50 Shades of Grey. I've read it numerous times. And from a reader's standpoint, it's entertaining. And if you've never read erotica, it's probably pretty fresh. However, to look at it from the perspective of a metaphysical, holistic practitioner, an energy worker, and to also look at it from, you know, a writer's point of view, it's actually quite brilliant in the sense that there is this purity of spirit in this woman who can love someone who's so wounded and bring him up into the light, as the writer states in that book. And to be able to trust so implicitly in the love that you have for someone that allows you to be able to really stand in your second chakra, perhaps, and recognize that you have a choice. You can choose to stay or you choose to go. And in choosing to stay, you open yourself up to so many different levels of love and sensuality that you can go to some places, some really dark places that you may not feel comfortable doing. And yet in doing that, you know, this character finds her boundaries. What's her sense of self and her sense of self-worth? And so I really enjoyed it because of that. And I had read so many steamier erotica books that while the sexual nature was graphic, and I was more impressed by his stamina. I was just like, wow, to be able to have sex 4 or 5 times a day, now that shit is hot. And I liked the writing, too. It was entertaining.
So they were doing a lot of fucking, huh?
They do, and yet the love story is really beautiful. I like it.
Megan, when you write, do you play with your pussy before you write, while you're writing, or after you finish writing?
Well, you know, babe, it kind of depends, because sometimes I will get so aroused as I write that I just have to. And I remember there was one story that I was writing out longhand, and I was writing in my secret journal, and I was writing a fantasy that got me so turned on that I had to touch myself as I wrote. I had to play with my pussy as I wrote. And I just couldn't. I had to play with my pussy as I wrote. And I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. And my clit was just pounding. My pussy was gushing. And I just had to get some relief.
Oh. Sakara, do you ever play with your pussy right before you write, or while you're writing, or right after you finish writing?
You know, I always wait till after. And the reason why is because if it's that hot, I will be so turned on. I can't stop. Mm-hmm.
I know you got a lot of scenarios that turn you on, but let's say you were narrowing it down to, I don't know, your top three, top five. Name one scenario or sexual fantasy that would be in your top five that really just, when you think about it, it just does it for you. Megan, I'll start with you.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I think that one of my top ones is that I love the idea of a man who, you know, just, like, comes to me with the whole idea of just, you know, pleasuring me, pleasing me, acting out my fantasies. And for the whole day, you know, he'll just do, you know, it's like he'll go down on me, you know, he'll lick my clit, he'll lick my pussy just for hours endlessly, you know. And then he'll take me into the bathroom, throw me in the bubble bath, you know, and I just lay there naked and writhing and totally getting into it. And then he could join me and, he could feed me chocolates and he could just challenge himself to make me come as many times as I can physically, times as I can stand it.
Okay, Sakara, tell me about one of your top five erotic scenarios and or sexual fantasies that just really does it for you.
Okay, this, I think this is pretty juicy. One of my fantasies is to be taken down into sort of like a jungle setting, and I come into, with a group of people, this ancient pyramid structure, and we start doing ceremony. And as we start doing ceremony, they start to pass along a drink, let's say, and this drink completely loosens up all your inhibitions. And at the same time, it also allows you to be able to open up and see and experience sensations that you normally wouldn't even feel. And just imagining being stripped naked and initially being bathed and just having my skin caressed and oiled and prepared and then taken on to an altar where I go through, say, a process of pleasing all nine different people. And each of these people represents, you know, a sacred opening, and as you have sex, they impart this energy form into your body, and you absorb it. And every time you have any kind of intimate interaction, whether it's having someone, you know, slip into your pussy or licking someone's
clit,
right into your pussy, baby, and into there, and having all these nine different lovers just turning your body on to such high vibrations of sensuality, to the point where you lose so much control that thing at the same time. Yes. That's when you know you've reached such a high level of energy within yourself and another that you could fly so high that you lose form and you just feel the sensation of how strong that lust, that love is. There's not a game over after that level. Now, can you understand, Alan, how two women like Megan and I were very discerning in our tastes adults and men, just simply getting physically turned on, that's one thing. But you turn everything on. It's almost like you can't hold back the seductress. You can't hold back the queen. It's like you're so hot, you got to crawl all over that person. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Is your pussy wet thinking about that?
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
Oh.
Bring the essence of you up through your body. You would feel like there's a snake wrapping around your dick, moving up your first chakra, turning your body into fire, going up to your second chakra, making this warm heat grow in your belly. And as I lick my way up your abdomen, you turn on your solar plexus, your third power center, and just feel your balls swell because you know I'm going to take such good care of you. I bring it up to your fourth chakra. I slowly open up your heart, allowing you to feel on a physical level how much I want you. On an emotional level, how much you turn me on. On a mental level, how much your words just seduce me. And on an energetic level, how much I can't wait for you to fuck me. I would take that energy, that snake-like energy that I've wrapped all around your dick, all around your torso, lick my way up to your neck, bite your ears, and whisper how much your sweet, sweet words just make my pussy drip so wet. And then, Alan, I'd go into your mind, your third eye, and I would open up the book and show you all the ways I could pleasure you, all the ways I could make you come. All the poses your body could go into and bend. And then we come up to your crown, where a crown is sitting on the head of a king. We'd open up that chakra, and you would feel that high, instantaneous connection from above, and it would flood your body with so much light, and you would come all over me.
Megan asked you about sexual fantasy. Now, if you don't mind, tell me about a real-life sexual experience you had that was just so out of the ordinary, so unconventional, that you still think about it to this day.
Oh, okay. Yes, well, you know, as you know, I have a passion for male strippers, you know, male exotic dancers. And this is true. This is a true story. One night, I had a private party. I invited a bunch of my gal pals to. And I hired a couple of male strippers. And they were two of the favorites that I had seen at different shows. There was one blonde and one brunette. They really turned me on, the tall and muscular. And the other girls at the party were not into it. Yeah, you know, they thought that they would be, but when the guys started dancing, they just got kind of turned off and everything. And I, on the other hand, well, you know me. I mean, I was moaning and just having, you know, laughing and, you know, I mean, I was getting, you know, guys were getting me down on the ground and, you know, just really getting, you know, freaky, nasty, you know. And eventually, a couple of the girls were like, okay, you know, this is getting a little out of hand. And I said, well, I'm sorry. And I was really sorry, you know. But so what I did is that, yeah, so what happened was is that eventually the other girls started to get a little freaked out because I was getting kind of freaky. Like I was rolling around on the ground with these guys and they were like, you know, simulating, you know, it's like I had my head, you know, stroking my long blonde hair and they had my head down in their G-string and their crotch, you know, kind of thrusting against me. And, you know, yeah, I was working my way up. Alan, they were simulating like they were fucking my mouth. Yeah. Alan, they were simulating like they were fucking my mouth. Yeah. See, I got myself a lot of blonde hair, and I was flipping it all around like I was riding them. I was riding one of them, like, oh, crazy, one flame. And I was kissing my way up the chest, and they were touching my tits. And, the other girls, they were touching my tits, Alan, touching my tits. And the other girls just got kind of freaked out. And so I said, okay, you stay out here. You enjoy the wine. You enjoy the treats. And I took them into my bedroom. And we closed the door. And I let them both fuck me. I let them both fuck me, Helen, at once. Yeah, they started out bumping and grinding against me, just like they were. And by that time, they were practically naked. And so then they got me naked. They were unzipping my, I had on this hot little black dress. They were unzipping my dress and peeling it off of my body. And soon, I was just standing there butt naked in front of them. And so when they thrust, I really felt it. And
so
they
fucked me real good.
They fucked me real good. They fucked me real good. I let them DP me. They double penetrated me. I let them both come inside of me, Alan.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking
hot. Yeah, one of them had his head in my tits, so the other one was, like, rubbing my back, and I was rubbing up against them, and I was purring like a kitty. And, I just came over and over, and I screamed. I screamed out when I came. And
did any of them come in your mouth?
Yeah. Well, they came in my pussy. That's where they came. They came in my pussy. Yeah. And so we just kept on dancing and grinding naked, and we got all sweaty. And one of them went down on me. I was sucking my clits.
Melissa Carr, now tell me about a past sexual experience of yours that was, by your own description, very unconventional, very out of the ordinary, that just really left an indelible impression on you, and you still find yourself thinking about it from time to time.
You know, what's funny about that question is that sometimes memories make things appear more romantic than they actually are or were, you know. But I got to tell you, when I have this memory, it still makes my body go on fire. I was probably in my mid-20s. I was visiting a friend, and I was also staying with him overnight. And my boyfriend was in another city. They were going to be appearing that weekend, and it was going to be a very pleasurable party kind of weekend. And that first night, however, I was just there with my friend, and I don't know if you've ever done ecstasy before. Have you, Alan?
No, I can't say that I have.
Well, I haven't done it very many times in my life, and this was probably one of the first or second times I'd ever done it. But let me tell you something. It was the most amazing 8.5 hours of sex I'd ever had.
So this wasn't your boyfriend. This was a friend of your boyfriend.
It was his best friend. It was a very naughty, slutty weekend. It was not one that I look back on with pride. I do look back on it with pleasure, not with pride, however, you know. He fucked me so good for hours and hours on end. I liked the way he would just run his tongue up and down my body. It's like he couldn't stop tasting me and touching me and feeling me. Oh, I loved having my pussy licked. It was so good.
So did you suck his cock real good?
No, I did more than just suck his cock. My favorite thing to do is run my tongue from the base of a man's dick all the way around his head, all the way down his balls. I think men's balls are so hot.
Alan, can I play with my pussy right now?
Play with your pussy right now.
Do you like to have your balls licked?
Yes, I do.
I would lick your balls.
I think men's balls are so hot. Ooh. How musky it smells.
I would lick that cock.
I'm
going to deep throat you.
My pussy
is so
wet right now.
Oh, say it again.
My pussy is so wet right now.
Oh, girl, I want to fuck you.
That's what I'm talking about. Fuck me good, Alan.
Oh, say it again.
Alan, I want you to fuck me hard.
And have Megan come lick my balls.
I want you to fuck Megan's now. And give it to me good.
How's that pussy feel right now?
It's on fire for you.
It's
on fire for you, Alan.
Oh. 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 She sounds so hot, doesn't she? So, Sakara, I think you'll like it. I'm just climbing and not your
girl. Maybe.
Yes. Alan, can I play with my pussy?
Oh, play with that pussy, baby.
My clit pounds when I play with my pussy.
Say it again.
My clit pounds when I play with my pussy.
I like what your voice does to me.
Tell me what it does to you.
It turns me on.
Play with that pussy, Sakara. Tell me how that pussy feels.
Oh, Alan, my pussy is so wet right now.
Say that again.
It is so wet right now.
You ladies got my cock so hard. You like the head of my cock?
Yes, it's perfectly formed and very long and nice.
Please send me a picture of your cock.
Say it again.
Can I whisper it too?
Yes.
Oh, Alan, please send me a picture of your cock.
How do those pussies feel?
Pretty damn good.
Oh, wet and hot and tight. Oh, throbbing. My clit is throbbing.
Megan and Sakara, I want you to tell me who Alan Roger Curry is. Who am I?
The king.
The king.
Oh, say it again.
King.
The king.
So, Sakara, how do you think your pussy will taste on my juicy cock while it is in Megan's mouth?
Oh,
pretty fucking delicious.
Oh,
Alan, I can't wait for you to fuck me.
Sakara, start sucking on your pussy real good. Lick that pussy real good.
You didn't enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, and I'll be sucking that clit into my mouth. And circling that clit real good. Tasting that pussy. I would taste that pussy so good.
Alan, I bet you would love to dip that tongue of yours inside my well of pleasure and taste how good my pussy is.
Oh, yeah. Do you like a tongue on your asshole? Then I take the head of my juicy cock and just start rubbing it on your pussy, Sakara. Oh, and while I'm rubbing my cock on your pussy, I'd have Megan come lick my balls. I would massage that pussy real good. Taste that pussy real good.
I would lick that cock.
Start sucking on your nipples. And I'll make you stick your tongue out so I can suck your tongue the way you would suck my cock.
I would suck your dick.
Then make it, I'd have you slowly slide my cock into Sakara's pussy.
Thanks for preparing it for me, Megan. I do like that.
I wouldn't like that at all. I would stroke that big cock I saw in that picture. I would rub it. And then just being a good friend, I would Clifford and Miss Cara's pussy. Clifford and the Sakara's pussy. Oh, yeah.
Then I start slow dancing in Sakara's pussy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'll be gyrating real good.
You can slow dance and dance whatever you want to inside of my pussy, Alan. Alan, I want you to love my pussy.
Alan, we want to make you come.
Alan, can you please let my pussy come? I want to.
Yeah, pull your hair and fuck your doggy style.
Yeah, eat lots of it.
Oh, yeah, play with that clit while fucking doggy style. Slap that ass. Squeeze that ass. Oh, yeah, fuck that pussy. And then I take my cock out of your pussy and fuck her mouth. Sakara, you want me to fuck Megan's mouth, don't you?
Good, Alan. Fuck Megan's mouth.
Oh!
You give it to her good. I want you to fuck Megan.
He devour you.
Oh,
I'm going to lick your face. I'm going to lick your balls. I'm going to deep throat you. I'm going to deep throat you. Oh,
Alan, make my pussy drip so wet. Fuck me hard, Alan.
Say it again.
Fuck me hard, Alan.
Say it again.
Don't stop. Fuck me hard.
Sakara, you want me to fuck your mouth and shoot my hot cum all in your mouth, don't you?
Sucking on you.
That
is a mouthful. And that's a very big mouthful. It didn't come for me like she did for you.
Oh, my God.
Well, you sent Megan a picture of your cock. All I got was a rooster.
Sakara is just a little sassy ass. Look at her. You are a character, Sakara.
I'm glad I can catch you off guard.
Yeah, you're a piece of work. Okay, continue.
Your show is powerful.
Oh, say it again.
I said your show is powerful. You know, it's the tone of your voice, how seductive your intonations are, the vibrations that you could just reach out over the phone lines and stroke a woman's breast just by the sound of your voice, how you could make her pussy so wet just by the sound of your voice. That's actually very hot. Well, you do that so well. The king of verbal seduction, the vibration, the tone that you set right there creates a precedence for how women, your listeners, will regard you. I think it's quite brilliant marketing, if you ask me.
Oh, say it again.
I think it's brilliant marketing. The king of verbal seduction, I like it.
One question would be, it's kind of the assumption or stereotype that predominantly women read erotica novels, but I wanted to know, do you two receive feedback from men on your books? And if so, what are some of the comments and compliments that you get from men, and particularly single heterosexual men, if any?
You know, what's fascinating about that is that when I've had men read the metaphysical erotica book, they're extremely surprised. They're surprised that they actually get a hard-on, and they're actually surprised that a woman would want that. When I say that, just the graphic, sensual nature of sex. And I tell them, well, you get to see it in porn. What better way do you think it is to turn a woman on than go through her mind, which has a hot button to her pussy? So when men have read our books, especially the metaphysical erotica books, they seem to connect more to the characters. I find it fascinating when I've talked to some men who choose
the character who doesn't get the girl, get an insight into their insecurities. And that's when I have that opportunity to tell them they are so much hotter than the supporting role.
Yes, and I can also say that throughout my career, ever since I started writing erotica, I've been very surprised by the number of men who get into my work. I've received fan letters. I have had male groupies. I've met a couple of them, you know, in person. And because they can be very hot, you know, and I too have been surprised. I get fan letters, I get love letters, you know, they tell me that I've made them come, you know, over and over again, and they give me suggestions for stories that they like me to write. And I found that they really like the idea of a strong heroine. You know, they really like the idea of a take-charge woman in bed, you know. And so they become very intrigued.
So I would assume that, Megan, you and Sakara, too, possibly, did you two see the movie Disclosure?
No.
Yes, about the sexual, Demi Moore.
With Demi Moore, because she was an interesting character because, I don't know if you remember, Megan, that towards the end of the movie, after it's determined that Michael Douglas is acquitted of the sexual harassment charges, she gives this, like, soliloquy about, you could arguably say, the modern erotic woman. And, I can't remember the exact dialogue, but it was to the fact that she said, you know, that in my opinion, the days of women passively waiting on the sidelines for, you know, this man and that man to choose them, those days are over. She said, if I see something I want, a man I want, I'm going to go after him. I'm not going to wait for things to happen. I'm going to make things happen. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So would you two, given my female listeners listening right now, because I get asked this question by women a lot. They say, Ellen, is that a turnoff for women to be aggressive? And what I always say is, I say, there's a difference between being assertive and aggressive. I love assertive women who initiate action and make things happen. Where I would distinguish from aggressive would be, okay, say I'm at a party and a woman like Sakara just came to me and said, you know, I wanted to introduce myself to you. I'm Sakara, and I tell her my name's Alan, and she says, well, I wanted to let you know I think you're very handsome, and I would love to connect at some point in the future, and she gives me her card. See, I would love that. Now, where a woman can mess up, in my opinion, going from assertive to aggressive, is if a woman, that same scenario, and a woman comes up to me, and then she says, okay, so you're going to call me on Tuesday, right? You're going to call me on Tuesday, right? Let me get your number. And then she calls me on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. She's like, why didn't you call me? I thought you were going to call me on Tuesday at 8 o'clock. You're like, oh, shit, what's wrong with this? So, but what do you feel about the 21st century woman being more, you know, assertive with her sexuality and her interest in men?
I think that, you know, the woman that you just described, you know, I don't see that as being a modern assertive woman, because when you think about it, that kind of harkens back to the 1950s, you know, like that whole mentality of, I hope he calls me, you know, I'm going to wait here by the phone, oh my God, I hope he calls me, you know, and so the way that the modern women differentiates from that is that, we have our own career, we have our own lives, we're very busy, and so we're not going to sit around waiting, and we're not going to jump all over you to be constantly calling us and constantly stroking our egos and everything. You know, we're going to have our own power and our own selfhoods and individuality, you know, and so that's what really differentiates an aggressive woman, you know, the woman you described, from an assertive, you know, woman.
Okay, Karen, what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, a lot of the history that I've had with just traveling and learning different aspects of spirituality and energy and healing, One of the things that's come to me is that, you know, our journey in creation is really a process of remembering who we are, remembering our abilities, remembering our path and purpose. And some women and men who kind of come off a bit aggressive in their approach to others oftentimes don't really know themselves. And so when a woman is secure in her sexuality, her sensuality, her skin, she knows who she is and she knows what she wants, there's almost not that need to be so forward, because there's this ability to just relax and trust in the flow of things. And even if I came up and gave you my card, it would be on my responsibility to determine how I want to feel, whether or not you choose to call me. I would hope you would call me. However, I can't be attached. So the modern woman these days lives in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are calling and asking why you haven't done this or that, they're still too attached, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not time for that. It's time to move forward, grow up, change those granny panties.
go ahead.
Yeah, swap out granny panties for Victoria's Secret, you know, or
right.
Agent Provocateur.
For sure.
So, Megan, now tell my listeners any final thoughts you have about how, if my listeners were to read one or more of your books, how you think they would benefit from reading the books.
I think that they, much like the erotica that started my career, you know, like the book that I described, The Lover by Robin Scone, it would empower them, it would free them up, and it would let them know that they're not the only ones at home thinking dirty thoughts and having desires and fantasies, that there are other women like them, and that it's okay to enjoy sex. It's okay to be multi-orgasmic. It's okay to enjoy porn, you know. It's okay. And so I would want the readers, you know, to thoroughly lose themselves in the fantasy that I provide them.
Now, let me ask you real quick, Megan. Are you familiar with Candida Royale?
Yes, I love her. I know her, actually. Yeah.
You know her?
Yes, I corresponded with her back when I was with Playgirl. She is an awesome woman, and she really made the first porn for women.
Yeah, you know, I had her on my show, my other show, Up Front and Straightforward, and yeah, she was I just thoroughly enjoyed talking to her. She's a woman, and we were talking about earlier about masculine and feminine energy. What I liked about her is that I can tell she's this very strong-minded, ambitious woman who doesn't wait for opportunities to happen. She makes things happen. But at the same time, she let me know that she's more than a woman, and she has a high degree of feminine energy. But, yeah, she was a pioneer in adult film erotica for women, where she did away with the money, as they call it, the money shot, and more the emphasis was on the woman being pleased and satisfied in the film as opposed to just the man.
Yes, and she sets the guideline. There are no money shots, you know, in her films, and she is amazing. Some of the titles that I would suggest from her are Stud Hunters. That's one of my favorites, and also My Surrender, which is will actually bring you to tears because it's a story of a woman really letting down her barriers, and Gina Fine was the star, and I believe she won an Adult Video News Award for that film, and she gives this beautiful soliloquy at the end about how she cheated herself of pleasure for so long and how she needs to accept her intimacy, you know. And Candida is the bomb. She's a great lady.
So, Sakara, and what are your final thoughts and things you want my listeners to marinate on and think about as they read books like The Root and The Sacred Fire and just the idea of metaphysical erotica in general?
Well, I think one of the most important things that I would love to imprint to your listeners is that every life is sacred. Every body is sacred. And when we recognize just how beautiful we truly are, no matter what our imperfections, when we can truly love and accept ourselves and not feel guilty or shameful or judge ourselves for feeling pleasure, feeling sensual, and just feeling, oh my God, just being able to feel, period. When we can allow ourselves that gift, then we can allow ourselves to receive. And when we receive these really, really high, high messages, vibrations, and especially tap into the story of love in these erotica books and a lot of the erotica books out there, we'll come to understand that one of the reasons why human beings come back on this planet is so that they can experience love. They can experience sensuality. They can experience connection. Because when we connect with one another, when we really lose ourselves, then we are in essence the divine, seeing the other and having that really soulful connection, that really high vibration of light. So in all essence, you know, I'm really excited the evolution of erotica in the world. I'm excited about the evolution of men and women's ability to be more sensual, more centered, and really owning who they are and owning their power. If anything, that is the sexiest factor about a person. It's not what they look like. It's not what they wear. It's not even what they say. It's how much they truly own and accept who they are.
I want to wish you ladies continued success and thank you for joining me for episode number 10 of the Erotic Conversations, and I'm sure the listeners are going to download it like crazy.
Awesome. Yes, well, thank you. Yes, this has been wonderful.
This is quite fun. I enjoyed this today. Thank you, Alan, for having us on your show.
Happy birthday there, King.
Oh, say that again, Sakara.
Happy birthday, King. You deserve it. Indeed.
On that note, all right, ladies, bye-bye. This episode of the Erotic Conversationalist was produced by Alan Roger Curry for Mode One Multimedia Incorporated.